Listening Dog Media.
The Hot Mess Mum. The mum most likely to send her kids to school in regular clothes on non-school uniform day. The mum who forgets to sign the permission slip for school trips. The mum who has probably put leftovers in her kids' lunchbox on more than one occasion. But most importantly, the Hot Mess Mum is actually rocking it and is doing a far better job than even she thinks. Please welcome our Hot Mess Mums, telling it as it is, Kelly and Jenny Powell.
It's the Hot Mess Mums Club podcast. I'm Kelly Pegg.
And I'm Jenny Powell, and we are honoured and so excited. Please, will you welcome? She needs no introduction, even though we're giving her one. It's Kerry Katona. We're back for another year of the Hot Mess Mums Club with Swan.
We've got some exciting plans for 2021 and we can't wait to share them with you.
Head to swanbrand.co.uk and use the discount code HOTMESSMUMS20 for 20% off.
The Hot Mess Mums. Kelly Pegg with Jenny Powell.
You had your 40th in lockdown, didn't you?
I did.
And what a decade. So we can talk about your 40th, what you did, and then looking back, I thought, because I'd love
looking
that.
Looking back on when we first met.
Yeah.
I cannot escape, I cannot forget. You can make me whole again.
What was it like turning 40? So I turn 40 next year, and I think, I feel a bit like for the last 6 months or so, even thinking about it, I feel like I've been having some kind of midlife crisis, if I'm honest, which I feel bad about, saying that.
I actually wrote about Jenny in my column.
We shared that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Thanks.
Because one of the topics was about how you got mistaken with your daughter, and I am the same with my 17-year-old Lily. Touch wood, I've been blessed with really good skin. I've got a baby face. The amount of stuff I shoved up my nose all those years ago and I drank.
You'd never tell.
I've been really blessed that I still think I look quite young.
You do.
The fact that I've got a toy boy who's 8 years younger than me.
Love it.
I've got a sore back at the minute and I'm working that day. I've got cold in my hips and everything. I thought, oh my God, is this what happens when you turn
I thought you were had a sore back because you just said you got a toy boy and you've been hopping all night.
Sore back. Oh. He's out of all these kids in this house.
Oh. I was going to say, how does that work? How does the old jiggy jiggy work when you've got five? I mean, there's only some time, you can tell them to go and watch Scooby-Doo on a Sunday afternoon like once, and then what?
Well, the thing is, my DJ, my youngest, right, but God love her, she lost her daddy last year, so I've proper model coddle DJ. It's my own fault. She gets in bed with us, and we've had to say to her, like, I've had to make her bedroom that little bit special, and I've got a big bolt on my door now.
Yes!
And I need one of them. Hide it. Last night, I said, let DJ sleep with you. I said, oh, I'll leave this door open, you'll hear me having sex.
It's so true, though.
And then y'all went to bed.
See, Martin keeps saying to me, will you put a lock on that door, Jenny? I'm like, don't be so daft. Yeah. Children never hear all that. Honestly, they don't. And then
I'd be mortified if my kids heard me.
But you know what?
Mortified.
They must do. I had Pollyanna, she's 12 now, and she's
my mum used to call me Pollyanna when I was a kid. Come on, Pollyanna.
Pollyanna.
I'm you know,
but sorry, you, Pollyanna's a good Pollyanna's a great name because it comes from that movie about the girl who made everyone happy. So that's probably why your mum did that, because you are you're just a ray of sunshine, as you well know, Kerry. You are. Straight away, you just exude it, positivity, and you're so likeable. And that's why you've got such a great fan base, I think, and people are very loyal to you.
I think, not blowing smoke up my own bottom, I don't know how much to wear on this podcast. For me, I think humour's always been my defence mechanism. Being an only child, not knowing my dad, four sets of foster parents, three refuges, watching my mum slit a wrist and taking drugs from the age of 14 with my own mother. I've never known any different, really. So the one thing I will say about myself, you can knock me down, but you won't keep me down. But there have been times in my life, and if it wasn't for my kids, I probably would have done something stupid to myself. And I'm very open and honest about that. When I was doing the drugs and I was doing whatever I was doing, and it was more of the fact that I wanted something bad to happen to me because I wasn't coping with the press, with people selling stories. I didn't know how to get out of it. But the one thing that I've learned about situations situations is, like, you know, for many years it was Brian's fault for leaving me. It was my mum's fault for my childhood. It was the accountant's fault for stealing all my money. He went to prison, but I never got any of it back and I went into bankruptcy. It was Mark Cross' fault for constantly giving me all these drugs and my bipolar medication and ripping me off. I hated everything. The world owed me a favour that I had to own it. I had to take responsibility. I had to say, you know, no one shoved. No one made me put that stuff up my nose. I trusted the wrong people. I have to accept it. And I've had to send out a lot of love and energy to be able to move on. You're driving your car, you've got your big windscreen, and then you've got this little rear view mirror. And that this big window you're looking through, that's your future. But for so long, I was stuck in my past. I was just constantly looking at the past. It's nice to glimpse every now and then at your past to see how far you've come, but you've got to move on, accept it, and, you know, if you've got to share your story and help others, I think.
It's amazing. Yeah, in your 40s now, so you're set up. It looks to me you've never been happier. You look like you're sorted. You're levelled out. Mm. You've set your stall out for this. My friend Caroline, she's from Warrington, and that's why I chuckle, because she goes, Jenny, set your stall out. And I'm like, telling you now, set your bloody stall out. She's always like that. She's always telling me what to do. She's very wise, and you remind me of her, because
she's got the gorgeous looking as well.
Yeah. Same. Those Warrington girls. Mr. Smith has got a lot to answer for. But I forgot to say, so what did you do on your 40th?
On my 40th, what did I do? Oh, we went to Spain.
Oh, wow.
We went to Spain, me, Ryan, and all the children, just us. And we all know I love a good proposal, so I got engaged.
Bowling away.
Wow. Again.
And,
we went. And then on my actual 40th, because we was in quarantine when we got back, Ryan got in touch with a restaurant and got us and got lobster delivered to us, and we had a bottle of champagne and just sat in the living room, and the kids tied it up for me. And see, age bothers me. What it is with age, turning 40, I know I'm getting closer to dying.
It does. I think about it all the time. I think, and then when I get to 50, I've got less than half the time I've lived. My husband's 52. I know. Me too.
It really does. It gives me anxiety.
It's terrible. You can lie awake thinking about it. My husband's 52, and he's fine with it most of the time. He can't
stay
toes.
You're like Jenny, right? Do you know what I mean? Like Jen and stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. That's all right. But for the rest of us, you look fabulous for 40, though.
You do.
You don't look 40.
And I love all this filter-free thing, you know, because
never
you're the real
it.
Deal.
Never, ever use
I think
a
you're the real deal.
Never use a filter. I mean, I know if I do a photo shoot, they might touch it up a bit and stuff, but on my Instagram, this is a thing with Instagram as well. The one thing that people don't do, I always feel it's like keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it? You know, people only show you what they want you to see. And I get that and you understand it. But I feel like somebody like me who has a platform, that if I'm having a shitty day, I'll let them know I'm struggling today, because I think it's so important for people to talk about these things, especially money trouble, you know, and what's going on in the world right now. No one seems to wants to talk about it, but
I think what you said
about me, do you know what I mean? I can't shut up.
I like what you said about Christmas, actually. Because you were saying about, you know, be careful what you put out there and you know, all the lavishness and all the rest of it. Because there are people that have got, you know, they're not getting an income this year, or, you know, it's dropped dramatically. And you've got to be careful and don't shove all this sort of Christmas consumerism down their faces. And I thought that was really good because you did it well. And I think you're reaching
some
people out to
people. Took it the wrong way. I mean, by all means, show how happy you are, show your joy. And like every Christmas, I always show the pile of presents I've given the kids. I'm not going to do that this year. I've got eight bin bags I've got to give to charity there, because I was in a refuge, you see. I'll never forget being 9 years. I think this story's actually in the Mirror today, actually.
I've been reading it. I was reading it earlier. Yeah.
You say, I don't know if it told you about Christmas.
Yes, it does. It says about how,
the women,
you know, there was a woman in there who used to cook for you and look after you when your mum wasn't around.
No, we got Reed Holmby, my mum, in this house in Manchester, Viola Street, number 11, I'll never forget it. I must have been about 9. It was Christmas morning. We just got out this refuge and we had no furniture, no decorations, no nothing. This is Christmas morning. And the two women who run the refuge, they do it to, you know, all these mums, and they knocked on the door and they had this bin bag of secondhand stuff, you know, like a Love Heart smeller that you put in your knicker drawer, and like cans of beans and corned beef in a tin. And they had, you know, and we were so grateful. And they had this Batman game that was still brand new. They couldn't play it because it was too complicated, but I was so eternally grateful for that I do go OTT with the kids at Christmas. But when I was in Wimsey, I saw a change in my Molly and Lilla. I found my real family for the very first time. I had brothers and sisters from my biological dad who died before I got to meet him. And the Scousers, like, and Dad always said something like, are they poor? You know, and I saw a change in, because it was at private school, there's in the same class as Paul's kids. And
Cheshire set.
So I took Molly and Lily to a refuge. I took them to say, look, you know, you kids have been born with a silver spoon, but I wasn't born like that. You know, not everyone's got two cars on the drive or a swimmer. You know, you're really lucky. And thankfully, since that moment, my kids are extremely... I mean, I got my Heidi a phone for birthday. She cried. She was so grateful and so appreciative.
And that's how it should be.
That's how
it should be. And like, it's the wrong colour or when I'm going to get a cover for it.
Yeah, no, she cried. She was so over the moon. And all my children have been like, even now, like, I'll go to mom, do you want some money? She goes, no, you keep your money. It's fine, mom, you keep your money. You know, so I think there was a change in their attitude. And I just think this year, with everything that's going on, and if I could help it, I mean, I'm getting messages, can you pay me rent for me, from complete strangers. And if I could, I get suicide letters sent me all the time and all kinds of things. And I just think, I'm training to be a life coach as well, you see.
Perfect.
I just think if I could help more people, I would. But by all means, show what you've got for Christmas, spread the love, but don't do it in a... oh, look what I've got kind of thing. Because a lot of people do that on Instagram, don't they? Oh, yeah. look at my Rolex and look at this and look at that. And
or like they get all the Christmas tree given to them and all the things, you know, for an ad.
I do all this
and they put it up. I mean, I know they get paid for it.
Yeah,
but I think right now, you know, especially as we have all the school dinner stuff, you've just got to think about it.
Talked about that as well.
Yeah, because I mean, that should bring it home to all of us. That, I mean, I was outraged with all of that. But the fact that we've got kids in this country that, you know, getting fed in the holidays,
it's ridiculous,
it's horrendous, you know. We think we just switch on the telly and watch something abroad and it happens over in Africa. I think
it's
people walk around
here
and think that
it's happening here right now. Touch wood, I've been very, very blessed financially. I'm in a really good place. I'm on top of everything and I'll do my and I get sent a lot of freebies. I get sent all kinds, but I'm also one of these for promoting small businesses as well. But you know what people are like on Instagram? Oh, yeah. And no one actually sees the side of what I do for charity. Every time we go Morrison's, we buy a food bag. You know, I just gave £20 donated because it was on the adverts for I was in captain of the Salvation Army. I was in Salvation Army with my mum. I just donated to that, and every little bit helps, you know. And I've done all these bin bags for charity, and you know, all my kids' hand me downs and things, because I had hand me downs. All my stuff was off a car boot sale.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that have that. You know, I don't mean to make us all sound old, but generation-wise, you know, I'm obviously sort of your age, Kerry. Yeah. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was raised by my grandparents.
I just say, you look great as well. You look great as well, my darling.
I feel ancient inside. I've been up since 4 with my toddler. But thank you. But, you know, we didn't have all the things that they have now. Like, my daughter's 7, and the other day she said, my trainers are getting too small. And I said, all right, okay. And my brother has got a friend who works for Adidas and he gets like a massive discount. So literally it cost him nothing. So I said, well, talk to Uncle Wilf. And she went, no, I want Nikes, not Adidas. And I just think to myself, and I said, well, you'll get what you're given.
Given, and you'll appreciate it.
I never had any designer labels when I was 7. I had those fucking awful pimpsels that tennis shoes they used to call them or something. I mean, they just live in a different world, I think. And it is a generation thing as well.
I tell the I live with my nana Betty. I live with all kinds of family members. My nan used to get our stuff off a car boot sale. I remember these kids had Reebok, and I got my nan got me these three jumpers. I think there was like a green jumper, a grey jumper, a red jumper off this car boot sale, and I got some wool and tried to sew in Reebok so I could fit in with all the others. And then she got me some shoes, and it gave me verrucas.
Our Hot Mess Mums, telling it like it is, Kelly Pegg with Jenny Powell.
We'll be back with Kerry shortly, but let's have a quick chat about our friends at Swan.
For any new listeners out there, Swan is an amazing British homeware company whose products are all very Instagram friendly.
They sell everything, including coffee machines, air fryers, vacuum cleaners. You really can give your whole house a makeover with Swan's products.
One thing I think's perfect for this time of year is their slow cookers. I've always got mine on the go. There's nothing better than sticking a nice warming meal in there at the start of a cold day and then the whole family tucking into it that night.
To check out this and more, just head to swanbrand.co.uk and use the discount code HOTMESSMUMS20 for 20% off.
Yes!
Kelly Pegg, Jenny Powell, Hot Mess Mums.
Yeah, I said, talking about breeding, you've done enough breeding with the dogs.
I don't want
not
no
with the dogs,
more.
But you don't want any more. What does Ryan say?
Has he got any? Obviously, your children are his children, but,
we've been together for over 2.5 years now, and I've only just got engaged. Normally, I'm engaged, pregnant, married, and divorced in 2.5 years, so I'm doing something different this time.
Yay! That's good.
If I was to have another kid, you see, with DJ died when she was born, and I almost died. It was the most horrific thing I've ever been through. And my mum said something to me, that she goes, "That's your body telling you enough's enough, Kerry." You know, and now
it's
she's
a lot
dad.
to
she's pure evil, she is now. If I was to do it again, because me and Ryan would make good-looking kids, and Ryan hasn't got any of his own, we have spoke about it, I'd probably go surrogacy.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd be very selfish to just do that for Ryan when I've got five beautiful kids. And if something was to happen to me and then they're left without a mother, and Ryan understands that and he's completely on board with it. But at the moment, no, I think we're in such a good place at the minute. I think I've been renting for 13 years. We want to own a house. We want to get married. We do need the right way this time.
Yeah.
Don't rock
the boat just yet. Yeah.
Yeah, we're
fine.
All right. You know, I've got a load of kids here anyway. I feel like we're dancing sometimes.
Because your last birth of the world was traumatic, wasn't it? It was you had a bit of a shocker, didn't you?
Yeah, it was awful. So when DJ came out, I was old, you know, and I knew something. She was born with six fingers on each hand, my DJ.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what to say.
Martin dated someone once, my other half, and he said she had six fingers.
Oh, she hasn't got them anymore.
No, this girl did. But anyway, that's another story. We'll talk about that later.
Well, when I was dating George, he was like a proper bad boy, and I was like sat on his knee, and I was like, "Oh, and what's that scar from?" And he was like, "From fighting." I'm like, "Ooh, and what's that scar from?" He went, "I was born with six fingers." I was like, "What?" So he was born with six. Yeah, so it was hereditary. He used to try to tell me it meant royalty from his tribe. He was full of shit. He was just weird. So she was, but when she came out, I was holding her. I thought, she's not breathing. And I actually gave her to George. And I never said anything. It was the weirdest thing. And I thought, I froze. And George said, you know, this baby's not breathing. But because my placenta erupted inside,
she
was concentrating on me. And she pressed this buzzer, this big red button, and this crash team came in and they're doing a little CPR on her chest like this. And it was the most horrific thing ever. And then they had to operate on me straight away. So I went one way and the baby went another. But George decided to stay with me because in his head he was like, "I don't know this baby.
Yeah, but
I want to stay with my wife." Yeah. And he actually carried me in the operating room. And they operated on me, and they came in. They said, "Have you given her name?" as if to say she's not going to make it. If
right,
we give her
so
a
name,
and
her.
I could hear all these mums with their babies, they're all crying, and I was. It was the most horrific thing I've ever experienced. And she was on life support for 4 days, and then she made a complete recovery. Now she's just a little shit.
But you dote on her, like you say, because with DJ, I presume, because, you know, with what happened with George, etc., yeah. And so soon as well, I suppose for you, I felt it when I got divorced, actually, or my husband left when Pollyanna was 10 weeks old. Mm. It was like, right, well, it's just me. She's mine. She's just mine. She's no one else's now, because I have this responsibility. I'm accountable now. It's just me. I mean, your situation's much more dramatic than mine, but you get that feeling. And I think it's so intense. And if, you know, you even saying, oh, I mollycoddle DJ, but that's okay. Mm. So you should. And it's a natural thing, I think.
Yeah, it is. But there's also that point as well where am I making a rod for my own back here? Do you know what I mean? Oh, bear with me. There's somebody at the door. I do apologise.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. Oh, she's such a lovely girl.
She is lovely.
She is good.
Yeah.
Sorry, just a postman with a letter that isn't even for me.
Oh, God. I hate it when they do that and they read the addresses wrong.
Well, the guy who owns this house, because I've only moved here in March, it's for him anyway. But that's not very exciting. That's not going to get your ratings up. Let me tell you about when I was doing drugs. There we go.
Yeah, let's... I've never had any.
You don't bloody need them, your crackers, what? Is it? I sometimes think though, when I think, God, I mean, I'm nutty anyway, do you know what I mean? And I sometimes think, God, I was absolutely crackers on that stuff. But the reason why I was doing drugs was just to fill this void of loneliness, of self-worth, of, you know, the drugs became my best friend, really. It was the only thing I could rely on, because no one else is there and everybody else was doing it who was around. Like my mum, you know, I'd go around with my mum's and my mum go, should we get a bag of Coke? That's how it was. That is how it was. And I thought people who didn't do drugs were snobs.
Mm. I'm not a snob, I just don't know.
But I didn't know any. From the age of 14, my mum was a lesbian, and I went in toilet with her. I followed her and her girlfriend, and she was in the toilet for ages. And I thought, and I was only allowed to have supervised visits with my mum at the time, but I snuck off to see her because she's my mum. And she had this bag of white powder in her hand, and I was like, well, what's that? What are you doing? She went, it's sherbet. And put it in my mouth, and it was speed. So I just thought, I had a great time. I loved it. I thought, oh, this is great, isn't it? And I honestly got, and I thought, well, this is what you do.
Mm. This is, and how is that now with you, you know, as you know, you're 40, you know, you're a mum yourself. It's when you become a mother that you really look at your own mother, don't you? You look at them differently.
Yeah, I mean, that continued with my mum for, like Brian was my knight in shining armour, in the respect that he took me from Warrington to an island to get me away from it all, you know. But there were times that I knew me mum, and like, I mean, I went to rehab and I ring me mum up and she's like, oh, just having a few lines of coke, you know. And then I end up marrying my mum's drug dealer, Mark Croft.
Of course you do.
Steven Spielberg couldn't write this shit.
I was going to say, he'd be shocked, wouldn't he? He's like, I'm sorry, it's a great script. I mean, but who would ever believe that? I mean, you know, people can't.
Honestly, yeah. I met Mark. Mark was dropping drugs off for me mum and I was in the living room. I'd been clean for 6 weeks from rehab. And when it's there, it's there. And I end up married. Mark should have just been a fling, a one-night stand kind of thing. You know, he's taking drugs, he's chatting shit in his flat. But I got two amazing kids from it, so I can't
Heidi
have any regret from it.
Yeah, Heidi, exactly.
He has nothing to do with the children. He hasn't seen the
nothing
children.
Nothing at all.
Nothing whatsoever.
Are you happy about that, though? Or
I am.
What I mean in terms of the kids.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But also in the fact, I never get a break. Do you know what I mean? I never have a day off from being a mum. They say, oh, you're going with your dad's at weekend. You know, but that is what it is. I think he took me to court because he wanted to see Max and Heidi. I hadn't seen them in about 6 years. I didn't have a problem with that. But my fight was, it's got to be consistent. You can't just say you want to see the kids and then not turn up. And then, because Max has issues, he's got, I'm with Cam's on Friday with my son, actually. I'm very open and honest about all the, I think people need, I mean, I didn't know any of these issues. I have to talk to other people to, you know, understand it and stuff and let people know that you're not on your own. You know, it's not just you going through it. And Max has a load of issues. And I said to the barrister, I said, well, he can see the kids, but he's going to have to come down south. The kids aren't just going to go up to his house at weekend where they haven't seen him for years. And Max needs his mum. So if he gets a hotel, comes and picks the children up, and he wouldn't do that. So he only wanted to see Heidi, not Max. And I was like,
I don't understand how they can pick that. And isn't it funny how a lot of men, and I know I've got a friend who went through something similar to that, they pick the daughter.
Mm. Yeah,
I find that really strange.
Max can be hard work when he was little. And the barrister asked me to say, ask Heidi to say she's staying at a friend's house. I said, so you're asking me to tell my daughter to lie to her brother because Mark can't handle his son? Is that what you're saying to me? No, it's one I've never heard of him again. And that was last time we heard of him. I never heard of him again. So that is what it is. I think Heidi's at that age now, especially when George died, because they called George dad, because, you know, he was in Max's life. Well, I was with George for 6 years. And I think that when George died, Heidi started going on about Mark. I said, look, if you want it to happen, I said, you're going on The Voice, right? I won't be surprised now, Heidi, if they try and get in touch, because she was on The Voice, my Heidi.
Yes,
You see, this is where I know what I did wrong. As a child, Kel, I didn't want to be rich and famous. I wanted to be a mum. I wanted to be a wife. I wanted that family unit. That's what I wanted more than anything. So when Brian left me, because my mum rejected me as a child and I went in foster home, I was like, it must be me. And I felt not only a failure as a wife, I felt a failure as a mother, that Molly and Lily now got this broken home, and that was my dream that was shattered. But I was pushing it on them, that when Mark proposed, I was like, yeah, I just got to get married.
I get
and
that.
Give him kids and create that family unit. And that did work. And then I did it with George, create that family unit, you know. And then I was on my own for 2 years, and I got into yoga, got into meditation. I started really reading The Secret and all my self-help books. And I started to educate myself and think, you keep doing the same thing, Kerry, you're going to keep getting the same results. And I had to really work on me and learn to love me before getting in a relationship with anybody. It was all up and down with Ryan at first. I was like, am I ready for this? It scared me because I didn't want to have another failed relationship. I didn't want to have kids or get married. And I pushed that on my children. It took me to the age of 36 for me to actually realise my kids are happy with just me.
Of course they are.
And it took me a long time.
Yeah, I think that's so understandable. I think it's so relatable to so many women out there. So many women who've gone through similar things to you. And it takes sometimes having your own family and being in your 30s, 40s, for everything to kind of start to click and for you to look at things and start to learn to love you a bit more. Mm. I think it's far more commoner than people realise or talk about.
Yeah,
as
I think because of my childhood, and I never had a dad. I had a stepdad. So when I was born, you ready for this? So when I was born, the guy who I called dad, his dad was my granddad. But my mum left the guy who I called dad for my granddad and married him. So my dad became my brother and my granddad became my dad. Then she left him for a woman and it turned out none of them was my dad. You with me?
I wasn't ready for it. You know when I said I wasn't. No.
Yeah. When you tell these stories, right, this is something I've picked up, you're so bubbly and you say it with such like laughter and fun and we're laughing with you, but there's hairs on the back of my neck at the same time that are standing up because you've been through just so fucking much.
Yeah, I think that's why I don't mind telling the story as well, because I think so many people just think, oh, she fucked up, that was it, she was on This Morning, she, you know, just a car. And it wasn't. And for me, I had to look at the root cause of what is it I'm doing wrong. And it was a massive thing that I had to dissect myself, and, you know, I had to have therapy, I had to work it all out. But again, I refer back, humour's always been my defence mechanism. I've never ever got upset over my past. I've recently just done a TV show, a big TV show. I can't tell you what it is. And on the
is it the one with Stephen? Is it the one with Stephen Bailey?
Oh no, no, the farm. I did the farm, but no, I did one right before that. Oh right, it's not that one. So I was away for the whole of October.
Yeah.
And we did this master interview, and I thought I was over George and his death, and you know, it was like, how was it telling a 5 year old a dad died, and you know, what was your childhood like? And for 2 days after, all I did was cry. All I did, I thought, what's up with me? This isn't, and it's almost like I had compassion, not sympathy for myself. I had a little bit of compassion for that little carer who was a little kid.
Of course.
I watched my mum slit her wrist at the age of 3. You know, that's why I've got Molly and Lily on my wrist, because I thought, I've got bipolar. My mum's got manic depressive. She's alcoholic. You know, she went down the drug route. She was always trying to kill herself, my mum. And I thought, you know, if that's something that's going to happen to me, I just remember that feeling, that self-worth of not feeling good enough. Are not anybody wanting me, kind of thing. So when I went to rehab, I wrote on my wrist my children's names in bio, and I thought, well, if it is genetic, and I do try and do that, I'd have to cut through my kids' names. And I feel, what a selfish person I would be to do that to my children, because I remember how it made me feel. You know, I sat there one time and gave my mum all the pissing pills. Here, take them all. I made a take them all. I went, right, I'll phone you an ambulance. I've got my GCSE exams tomorrow. I'm off. I'll meet you at the hospital tomorrow. And that's the last time she did it.
No.
Well, in my presence anyway.
I can see why you became a star, though, in your own right. And you were in Atomic Kitten and all of that, because you have a quality about you, a grit. You know, just talking to you. Jenny said it earlier.
Not my tits, is it, Kel?
No! I can't see them. You shine. You do shine. And I genuinely mean that.
Yeah, I think when you were in the lineup of I'm a Celebrity, I remember watching it and saying, she'll win it. She will win it, because she's real. And she's
that's 17 years ago.
I know. Wow. I can't believe it. And I do remember thinking, because she's got, you know, she's got it. She's relatable. And you are, Carrie, and you should never, you know, you're a shining light for a lot of people out there who are struggling, and because of your experiences. And also what's interesting is you've really helped yourself a lot. And I think that's great for people to know. I can see that, yeah, you might have had therapy and you know, been sent to this person and that person and this, etc.
I've not had that much therapy, believe it or not.
No, I think you've worked a lot of it out yourself. And I do think that's also to do with obviously being 40. I think, you know, the next couple of decades, you'll find that, you know, you'll really come into your own. And I think, you know, you've got nothing but amazing, lovely things to happen.
I think that's another thing as well, why I'm very open and honest, because there's been times I felt suicidal. When I went bankrupt, I was like, how am I going to look after these little people who are relying on me? And I've had letters sent, I've had suicide letters. And the thing is, if I can get through that with the media watching as well, and everybody turning the backs on me, if I can get through that and pull through it, anyone can. And I'm so eager to encourage people to talk out. I mean, my kids, I love my kids. They're the reason I get up in the morning, but they're also the pissing reason why I cry in bathroom. And you only get worse as they get older, you know?
I know, everyone keeps saying that. Loads of people tell me that. We're at this cusp at the minute of going, are we going to try for one more and have three? And I don't know what's wrong with me, because my husband's like, let's just do it. Just get on with it. Let's just do it. And I'm just like, I need time. What time do you need? I just need time, because some days I'm pulling my hair out. I've got a 7 year old and nearly 3 year old, and I think I don't have any parents, so I don't have anyone to take them. You know, my in-laws are great, but my god, they're nearly 80, they can't hack them. You know, it's like, shit, if I have this one more, that's another 3 years of nappies, not going out, working on getting my body back, sleepless bloody nights.
I mean, I've been pregnant since I was 20.
She's been pregnant
when I had Molly. You know, I'm
permanently at the duff. I'm permanently at the duff, Carrie.
I just think I like shagging.
Oh, now you see, we differ there. I really don't.
Kelly's
I can't
so
be
not
asked.
Into it, she can't no. be bothered. She I really can't
I,
be bothered.
I think I had my first daughter and I think I lost a bit of, you know, the sparkle in myself. Yeah. And I don't think I've got that back yet. So it, to have a baby
19
has to be
years
planned.
Late, I'm still looking for it myself.
You've got a toy boy. You're all right. Mine's an old duffer. I tried to get him to do yoga the other day and he couldn't bloody
did
touch his toes. I was disgusted with him.
Did yeah, he do he it though?
He tried, but right. he can't bend. And it was all, and he, oh, ow, oh, fuck. I said, you need to sort your shit out. Like, you're getting on and you're not looking after yourself. This
it's
is not good
up.
Enough.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not pushing you around in a wheelchair in 20 years' time. So fucking
but
do something
I
about it.
When I don't
set your stall
my,
out.
Yeah. When I don't do my yoga and I don't train, I stiffen up even more.
Yeah,
and
you
I
do.
My
don't
mental
you?
Health drops as well.
Yeah, yep, yeah.
Massively drops. But going back to my mum as well, I just want to make it really clear. I love my mum to bits. She's completely, she still drinks. You know, I've got to accept who my mum is. You know what I mean? She's not going to change. But she went through a period of, like, she doesn't do drugs or anything like that now anymore. My mum's got rehab people to come and see. She completely changed. And the first lockdown came in, I think a lot of people started drinking again, didn't they, really? I think,
well, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, she's back drinking it and stuff like that. But I love my mum to bits. You know, my mum's coming for Christmas. I can't wait for her to come and see her. She's the only mum I've got. You know, and she's what it is. And a lot of people find it really hard how you can forgive your mum. But my mum had, she wasn't, my mum had a terrible childhood. Terrible. No one taught her or shown her. I had wonderful foster parents, my last set of foster parents. They were great. And I think I broke that cycle. I like to think I broke that cycle a little bit. But, you know, I had kids and I continue to do drugs. You know, it's something I'm not proud of. But I'm really blessed and respect that my kids didn't have a clue. They was clueless that I had this documentary come out called Keratona Coming Clean. And in this documentary, it was a 90-minute special. It shown the News of the World video of me snorting the coke. I was crying a lot in this documentary. My kids have never seen me cry at this point. And I sat Molly and Lily down and I said to them, I'm going to show you something now, this TV show that I've done. I said, and I want you to watch it because it's coming out and you're going to be going into school and people are going to be saying things to you. I said, so I want you to watch it, but I want you to realise that isn't your mummy anymore. And anything you want to ask me, ask me. And they sat on the couch and we were being filmed for my reality show, showing them. And I sat behind the kids. I remember this big red onesie on and I had these big fat tears just coming down my face. That shame, the embarrassment. It was horrible. And both the girls sat and watched it. And at the end of it, I said, ask me anything you want. And they was just like, when did all this happen? You know, I said, well, I kept it from them. She went, well, so you've been living this secret life. Why didn't you tell us? Because this is the difference with me and my mum. I've always been the mum. My mum's been the daughter. And I said to him, I said, because I'm the mum and these aren't your problems. She goes, so you've been going through this all those years and you never told us. I said, well, no, because it's not your problem. So I think that's where I'm different with my mum.
And you've broke the cycle.
Yeah,
you're 40 and look at you.
Yes.
You don't drink, you work out and you're healthy, you're raising awareness about this all, you don't do drugs. You have broke this, you know, where, so you are completely different. Because it's so easy when you've got a parent who's been an addict to worry your whole life, especially when you have kids, that you're going to be the same, you know.
I mean,
I think loads of women can relate to that.
Your mum hasn't got a purpose, really. You know, I ring my mum up now and it's 20 to 1 in the afternoon and she's not up. And I'm like, mum, you know, for me, if I wake up, I've got to get up. Because that was a trigger for me. When I was with Mark Croft, I'd stay in bed for days. I wouldn't wash. So I don't like, the only time I go to my bedroom is when I'm going to bed now. So if I wake up at 5, I'm up. I'm up and I'm out. But I understand me mum as well. And I can't be so judgmental too, because my mum's all the way up in Warrington. She's got nothing to get up for. She's on the sick. She's on benefits. You know, she's got all these elements wrong with her. And I think, well, that's just how she is. And she's happy of how she is. So I've got to accept who she is.
Do you find having that distance between you is good for you? And I mean that with the utmost respect.
God, yes. But I mean, mum can tell you that. I love love my mum to bits. I love going with mum. She waits on me hand and foot. I'll lie in her bed. She only lives in a one-bedroom council flat. I'll get me mum's. I love getting in bed. We watch our film. She'll cook me chips and stew steak, which I love. But any longer than a week and we're at each other's throat. It's the same with me and Molly. My 19, she'll come home and we get on great. And I think a lot of people are like that with the parents, really, aren't they? But the difference with my mum is it was like when me and Brian split up. I've never experienced press like it in my life. Obviously, I had to move back to England from Ireland. And the press and the paparazzi. I bought my mum this terrace house before I moved to Ireland, so she wasn't in a council flat anymore. And I'm around my mum's and there's like 40... It's like Coronation Street. It's like one of those streets in Warrington. There's like 40 paparazzi outside my mum's. And my mum's like, it's with her. I can't handle this. Oh, my God. You know, and I'm going, mum, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No one's asking how I am. You know, I'm going, do you want a bag of coke? Do you want some? It was almost like I was buying my mum's love and buying my mum's affection in a respect that I got to a point where I was enough's enough. And this is how my... And I didn't speak to my mum for years because she sold a story on me. And that, for me, was that was it then.
You're so, I cannot imagine though, can you, Jenny, that and then still being as lovely and as gracious and as caring as you are about her, because she wasn't the parent to you.
She wasn't.
And you're just, to be the way you are and to speak with so much love, because, you know, holding on to things only makes us bitter. Forgiving is the bigger thing to do.
You've got to let it go.
Bloody hell. You know, it takes a lot.
I'm 40 now and life's really bloody short. Do you know what I mean? How do I want to be remembered when they put that last nail in my coffin? I want my conscience to be clear. I don't want to hold grudges against people. I don't, it's like, you know, I was completely and utterly humiliated. Car crash TV, the interview on this morning, you know, I was so angry at ITV and Philip and Fern and I still am. I'm joking.
Fair enough.
But no, I'm joking. I get on great with them all now. But for me, I was angry at the world, really. You know, if I went on this morning slurring my words and I was in a wheelchair, I had a limb missing and he had 3-degree burns on my face and I was slurring, and they'd be like, why is your speech slur? Because of all this that you can visually see. Oh, God love her. Oh, bless her. Oh, you know.
But for you,
it's a mental health issue and you can't visually see what's wrong with me. Oh, she's pissed off. Now, when I sat on this morning and Fern had it in for me straight away because I fell out with Max Clifford at the time and she sat there with OK Magazine, right? Watch it back. And she goes, you know, you say, you know, OK Magazine, you've worked with him a lot, Kerry, you know, and it says here, you're in Marbella on this photo shoot and you're necking shots. I'm like, around the pool, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I was like, I'm 28 years of age, on holiday, with my friend, without my children. What else are you doing in Marbella apart from neck bloody shots? Yeah. You know, and that's what you do on holiday. You know, and I was like, I don't know what you're getting at. But for me, my speech was normal because when I used to film the Iceland adverts, we used to have to film a bit later for my speech to catch up because I was on clopromazine, Zopicone, effects. I was on all kinds of things. And I'll admit, I've shoved enough shit up my nose. I've drank till cows come home. I've got no reason to lie or hide anything.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then Philip was like, you know, your speech is a bit slurred. And I started, because I could see where the interview was going. I panicked. I was like, I've got, you know, why is that? I said, well, I've got an illness called bipolar. It's my medication. Isn't it, Mark? And not once did they say to me, what's bipolar, Kerry? And what medication are you on?
No,
not once.
Right, no.
And that was...
Because it wasn't their agenda, I presume.
Sorry?
It wasn't their agenda. They weren't interested in
that. Yeah, and I remember getting in the lift. I had my reality show with my thought. I was like, oh, I can fucking see what's going on. I can see papers now. I can see what's happening now. I remember my psychiatrist from the Priory telling me, let them know you've had a drug problem, let them know you've had a drink problem, but don't tell them you've got mental health issues, because if they can't see something, they're not going to understand it, Kerry. And they didn't.
No.
And it's taken 10 years. Even now, there's a meme of me going around on TikTok. I think
that's
it was
disgusting.
I think it was Gemma Lucy. And the caption is, remember when Kerry Katona was off a nut on this morning? And the meme is my voice, my speech, the thing of me on this morning, and her miming to it. So what I did was, I was getting all these DMs about it. I went, Molly, Go get me that bottle of champagne that someone sent the year before at Christmas. Go get it me, please. Molly gets it me. I opens it. I said, "No, film me." And so I filmed me miming to my voice like everyone else was doing, because everyone was doing this meme on TikTok or whatever it was. And it's just a big fat fingers up. I owned it. I owned it. So no one then went and took the piss out of me because they couldn't, because I
good
owned
for
it.
You.
It was done.
Good for you.
You know how to deal with all this now, but boy, it's taken a lifetime, I'm sure. And it's just, you know, for us all, the rest of us, it's exhausting just to think how, you know, you
I was suicidal.
Anyone, yeah, you didn't have anyone on your side.
I was suicidal.
No one, Kerry.
It was awful. I mean, the News at World made me more famous than anything. You know, I was on the front cover of that magazine, of the newspaper. Every other week it was, you know, my husband set me up with a camera in my bathroom, snorting the coke. It was like, there's nobody. And I wouldn't mind. I wasn't even doing drugs. For me, when I was doing drugs, I'd have a line I couldn't stop. So I'd have one on a Friday till Tuesday, raving nonstop, you know, in someone's flat off your head. That's what it was. It wasn't like I got up every day and was on it. And Mark had just cheated on me, and it was all in the papers. There was a video of him with this girl. And this bloke said, "Look, I've got evidence here, blah, 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 blah." He said, "But I want you to have a line." And my kids was in the garden playing. This is in Wimslow. I said, "I don't want any drugs. Just give me this evidence that you've got so I can see what these girls are up to with Mark." He said, anyway, I ended up having a line of coke just so I could get this paper. And it turned out it was Mark's handwriting, and Mark was in on it, and he put this camera. And I thought, you know what, Audrey? I thought, the amount of shit I've shoved up my nose, and they got me on one bloody line of coke.
Wow. Set
and
up.
And it was just like, this just... I feel like everyone just wants to make money out of me and sell stuff on me. That I was suicidal. It was horrible. It was
it's
horrible.
Despicable. And when I mean, obviously there was you of that kind of ilk and what you went through. And the only other person I always think about who was in a similar position, but I'd say probably hasn't quite come through it like you have, was Daniela Westbrook.
Oh, Daniela Westbrook, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw an interview with her recently. She did a podcast. It's an investigative podcast.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
and I cried. The things she was saying, I was talking about it to my husband. He's like, "Oh, fucking hell, what have you been watching now?"
Yeah,
but no, but it was very sad. Yeah.
And but she doesn't seem to have come through it like you have.
And there's a lot, I think what you have to do is, and this is, it's, I moved away. Not everyone's fortunate to do that, but it's almost like when you're in a tribe and you try and better yourself, but the tribe keep pulling you back, because every time I was trying to better myself, it was just a reminder that the people around me, they wasn't going anywhere and they didn't like it. So they try and keep you at that level. You know, my mum was one of them. The circle of friends around us, they was all the same, that every time I tried to, they bring you back down, because it was a reminder for themselves that they're going nowhere with their lives, and they don't want to.
And they wanted to drag you down with them.
Yeah, they just want to keep you there. Yeah. So I had to be drastic and just leave. And that's what I had to do.
Was there anyone back then, though, anyone who you would say through thick and thin has always been there? Anyone at all?
No.
A friend or
yes.
No one?
Me. Be your own hero, Jen.
I love that. It's so true, though, isn't it?
It is. It is.
When you look back,
yeah,
your best, your real, the one person you can count on forever,
it's yourself,
is you.
And I think
always.
I
think that's the thing you have to tell the kids.
Yeah, and I think I was so desperate to be loved. I really, really was. I just wanted to be loved by everybody. That it's taken me a long time to realize that your opinion of me don't matter. It's not. I don't give a shit what you think of me anymore. It's about what I think, and it took me a long, long time. I wanted everybody to love me.
Of course you did.
It doesn't work like that. And now I have to tell my kids, other people's opinion of you, it's not your bloody business what they think of you, Heidi. You know, it doesn't matter what these strange people behind this computer, it doesn't matter. And it can still affect you every now and then, but it's taken me so, so long to love me. And I couldn't get in a relationship with Ryan until Ryan enhances my happiness. I don't rely on him for it. It's a big difference. Whereas like when me and George split up, I know he's dead now, but when he was alive, I thought it was like a death, because I tried to give him some of my power so he felt equal to me because of what I did for a living, but he ended up taking it all from me. That I was like, so I can't function. You know, he did the skill runs, he did the cleaning, but it was all a very controlling thing, you see, because George beat shit out of me. But you surround yourself with people that you believe that's what you deserve. That's what you deserve. And that's what I felt like I deserved. And I got put in foster home because my mum's fella told us it was Freddy Krueger, right? He stabbed me mum. I pulled the knife out of her leg. He was going to chop us up, put us in the fridge, blah, 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 and all this. I got put in foster home. And I remember saying to me, mum, you can go through that a million times, but once is enough for me. And my mum said I lied about it. I got put in foster home. And he ended up doing the same bloody thing as what my mum did. And I remember saying to my mum, I get now why you found it so difficult to leave Dave for 6 years. I mean, I'd have black eyes. And I get it. It's almost like they groom you. Like, I'd get a good idea and I'd be on my hands and knees in a praying position saying, "Shut up, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it." I'd not done fuck all wrong. But you don't realise that at the time. So I end up doing exactly the same as what my mum did. And that's the one thing I will never forgive myself for, letting my children see the bruises on my face. And I profusely apologise to both Molly and Lily. Max and Heidi were too young, that I make them, shh, go straight upstairs to your bedroom. You know, that I did what my mum just did, you know, and that's one thing I can never forgive myself for. But I've had to learn to accept it, deal with it. Things happen for a reason. It's a process. I am now where I'm supposed to be. It happens.
You are. And you've been through, yeah, and you've been through more than, you know, most people. And at the end of the day, when you talk about, you know, being loved and everything else, when your kids, I see this with my children, you look up to your parents, you rely on them. They make you feel safe. You know that they love you. You've got their support. When you don't have that, the effects that that then can have throughout your later life, you know, so when you talk about not forgiving yourself for that, I think your girls will always understand.
I mean, it's hard, and it actually upset me when I did this master interview not long ago. It really got to me because it's not easy being Kerry Katona's kid. Do you know what I mean? Even to this day, my 13-year-old and my 12-year-old son, your mum's a cokehead. You know, your mum's an OnlyFans, your mum's this, your mum's that. And I think, I said to Heidi, I said, Heidi, if I didn't do OnlyFans, right, I only get my tits out. I started off as a pastry model, I'm not asked. Do you know what I mean? My kids know I do it. My Molly took my first set of pictures. I don't get my nunny out. No one wants to see that after five kids. And I started off as a pastry model and a lap dance. And I said to Heidi, I said, Heidi, if I didn't do that and I didn't go on TV now, but I was still famous and I started and I went to be a lollipop lady, they'll still take the piss out you, babe. If I went to be a dinner, they'll still take the piss out you, sweetheart. Doesn't matter what I do, they're going to take the piss out of you. So you've got to be strong. You know who I am. You know you're loved. You know you've got a great house. You've got a great life. And it's very, very difficult for my children. That hurts me because my kids are constantly being blamed and punished for my past mistakes. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And that is, oh, God, absolutely.
Yeah. And in a way, Molly and Lily, they're very, very strong, very tough. And, you know, they went through it at school. And I get it. And it's very, very difficult for them. But in a way, not that I'm glad. I hope it toughens them up a little bit.
They will learn things from it, certainly. And they'll get strengths from it. And I think also they'll be hugely emotionally intelligent, you know.
They're great kids. Yeah. They really are bloody great kids. All available free to a good home.
Producer Callum is sending me a message saying, Kelly, it's time to wrap this up.
We could speak for ages.
It's great.
I think
this would probably be two episodes as well, because this is so good. Yeah. I think we should really.
Perfect.
It's wonderfully powerful.
You know, I think.
And he only did it for free because it was starstruck by Jenny Powell. You lucky people and the gift that keeps giving.
Oh, well, I'm honoured. I truly am. And you've been nothing but a pleasure to talk to, Karen.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm just so glad for you. I'm genuinely so happy for you, honestly. Aww. I was reading up on you a bit last night. I thought, you know what, that girl, because all through your career, I think I met you on Stars in Their Eyes.
Yeah, I did do Stars in Their Eyes.
We did it. It was 2000. What is the Millennium one? I think we were sitting on a sofa. I was Janet Jackson, and I'm sure you were on that one.
Oh, wow. I was Marilyn Monroe. It was with Trisha Primrose I did it with.
Yeah, was David Ginola on it? Or maybe we were in the studio at the same time. I was definitely sitting on a sofa with you backstage at Celebrity Stars in Their Eyes. Maybe you thought it was Janet Jackson.
Maybe you thought it was Kerry Katona.
Gosh, we see we're gonna have to sort this one out next time we have a chat, because I just think I was looking back at everything and I thought, do you know what, that girl, she deserves to be nothing but happy, and I think your kids are very lucky kids, because you've really have been and seen and done it all, Kerry. But do you know what? The proof's in the pudding, and all these reality shows you've been on, right? People love you because they know. Deep down, people do. We all do. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm with you all the way, and you can come on this and, you know, for free.
Oh,
whenever
I'd love
you want.
To have you back. Yes.
No, but you must come back and catch up with us. And we'd love to take you out for lunch one time.
Ladies. I really loved it, and I love a good chinwag. It's been bloody great.
Huge love, Kat. I hope you have a lovely Christmas, and we will see you for that lunch.
Yes,
and
send your love to mum. Definitely.
Send my love to your mum.
I will.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kerry. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Hot Mess Mums, Kelly Pegg with Jenny Powell.
Oh, smashing. Thanks to Kerry, and also thanks to Swan for sponsoring this episode.
If you fancy giving your home a bit of a refresh at the start of the year, then make sure you go and check out their gorgeous products.
Just visit swanbrand.co.uk today.